Folks, your financial freedom is at stake when the government thrives on creating unrelenting inflation, an astronomical debt, crippling interest rates, and market turmoil that we haven't seen in decades. And now you have an administration that wants to tax everything that you have to fund runaway entitlement spending. You should empower yourself with opportunity and the freedom to pursue success and to keep the fruits of your hard work. And if you want to protect your future, you should call a precious metals dealer that I trust, American Hartford Gold. They can show you how to protect your savings and retirement accounts by diversifying your portfolio with physical gold and silver. And all it takes to get started is a short phone call. And American Hartford Gold can have physical gold and silver delivered right to your door or inside your IRA or 401k. They make it easy. American Hartford Gold is the highest rated firm in the country with an A+ rating from the Better Business Bureau and thousands of satisfied clients. Call today and they'll give you up to $5,000 of free silver on your first qualifying order. Call American Hartford Gold today at 866-887-1188. That's 866-887-1188 or text Dana to 998899. That's 866-887-1188 or text Dana to 998899.
Soldiers, sailors, and airmen of the Allied Expeditionary Force, you are about to embark upon the great crusade toward which we have striven these many months. The eyes of the world are upon you. The hopes and prayers of liberty-loving people everywhere march with you. In company with our brave allies and brothers in arms on other fronts, you will bring about the destruction of the German war machine, the elimination of Nazi tyranny over the oppressed peoples of Europe, and security for ourselves in a free world. Your task will not be an easy one. Your enemy is well-trained, well-equipped, and battle-hardened. He will fight savagely. But this is the year 1944. Much has happened since the Nazi triumphs of 1940-41. The United Nations have inflicted upon the Germans great defeats in open battle, man to man. Our air offensive has seriously reduced their strength in the air and their capacity to wage war on the ground. Our home fronts have given us an overwhelming superiority in weapons and munitions of war and placed at our disposal great reserves of trained fighting men. The tide has turned. The free men of the world are marching together to victory. I have full confidence in your courage, devotion to duty, and skill in battle. We will accept nothing less than full victory. Good luck, and let us all beseech the blessing of Almighty God upon this great and noble undertaking.
Man, 79 years ago today, and that was Eisenhower addressing the troops right before, D-Day was to commence. Welcome to the program. Dana Lash here with you. The top of this first hour on Tuesday, June 6th, 79 years ago, this took place. And one of my bucket list vacations is to always go to the north of France and to see Omaha, Utah beaches, and of course the other beaches that our allies also stormed in this huge undertaking that really had to be won. It had to be done. There was no room for failure. And the odds were actually stacked against us at the time, 79 years ago. And so many lost. There have been so many films made about this. And I think, you know, I don't know anybody in the United States, I don't know anyone whose family, who didn't have a family member who served in World War II. Isn't it kind of rare to come across World War II veterans anymore? It does seem that way. But 79 years ago, and I really wish, I mean, it is trending on social media. I wish more was done to talk about this every single year, because I really think that D-Day, I really think that this entire operation was one of the brightest spots in human history. And I think it was one of the most selfless acts that anyone could have ever done. Because when you realize what was required to secure the beaches, to secure this point on the map and go forward from there. I mean, it is nothing heroic, doesn't even seem to be the proper description. We have a lot of other stuff we're going to get to today. The FBI, the latest with that, 2024. But I want to start each hour today by talking about this because it is incredibly, I think it's incredibly important to discuss. One of, I was looking at, I always like to look at some of the very interesting stories that come from this. The some of the stories from the veterans and just, you know, these stories that have lived on from D-Day and from the various beaches that were stormed that day. And I'm pulling up my notes here. This one of the, because there's all kinds of stories about, you know, sacrifices and, you know, what went into the strategy and the churning of the water as these, you know, these Higgins boats approached the shoreline. And I mean, it is, it's something else. It is, I mean, to know what you're going up against and you're getting out of that boat, because remember when you're stuck in that boat, you, I mean, your head's, you know, everybody's kind of ducked down. They don't want to be sniped. It's really just an amazing act of bravery. And the flat killing field, as it has often been referred to. There was one story in particular that there was a lighthearted story, because there, this one I always thought was very, was fascinating to me. And it had to do with Sword Beach. Because, you know, we had Omaha and Utah beaches. The United States, you know, took, there were beaches the United States took. What, Canadians took Juneau. You had other allies that took other beaches. And one of the stories that I find incredibly interesting is this one of Brigadier Simon Shimmy Fraser, Lord Lovett of the 1st Special Service Brigade. He was a Scottish man. He told his men on the eve of D-Day that this is going to be the greatest military venture of all time. They have an important role to play. And he says, your children's children will say they must have been giants in those days. Now, they had to race through a storm of gunfire. They were on the eastern part of Sword Beach. They had to go 4 miles inland, and they had to provide reinforcements to the 6th Airborne Division along one of those canals. And alongside Shimmy was his trusted piper, Private Bill Millen. Now, bagpipes had been used previously in World War I to boost morale, but they're kind of easy targets, sadly, and a lot of them were killed. And so they actually enacted a policy to protect the bagpipers, and they were preventing them from marching alongside troops in direct combat. I didn't know that. That's a fascinating bit of history. But Shimmy, naturally, it's written, convinced Millen to go against policy when he told him, quote, ah, but that's the English War Office. You and I are both Scottish, and that doesn't apply. So they were apparently among the first to hit the beach. And immediately, Shimmy ordered Millen to play Highland Laddie. So here, turn me up. Yeah, so this was what the bagpiper was playing. And they're on, you know, they're on the beach. And Millen told the BBC later, he's like, I didn't notice that I was being shot at. And when you're young, you do things that you wouldn't dream of when you're older. He said, wounded men were shocked to see me. They had expected to see a doctor or some kind of medical help. And instead, he said, they saw me in my kilt and playing the bagpipes. And he goes, and it was horrifying. He goes, I felt so helpless. He saw total chaos of war. There was a captured German sniper who later remembered and told the story of watching Millen marching back and forth on the beachhead, playing his pipes. And they thought he'd lost his mind. They thought, this guy's nuts. And they didn't shoot him. They aimed their sights on people who had weapons instead of instruments, which I thought was, you know, kind of interesting. And Millen told the BBC, he's like, you know, I didn't notice what they were doing. And they prevailed. And they had marched to relieve the British Army, the army unit that had secured the bridge. That's what they had needed to go. They needed to go and help reinforce them. And so Shimmy's response, he apparently arrived at the rendezvous just after 1 p.m. He was 2 minutes late. 2 minutes late. I mean, some days I can't even get to church on time, but this man went through all of that and was just 2 minutes late to the rendezvous point. That's amazing. There's tons of stories like this, and I want to share some of them with you each hour, because that's one of the ballsiest things I've ever heard. And there's tons of stories like this all up and down the northern coast of France. Amazing. The greatest generation for a reason. Absolutely for a reason. I mean, these young men, they were getting out of these boats, Higgins boats is what they called them, and they were going across the channel overnight. There was a storm. This almost didn't happen. It was actually a day late in happening. And I get sick on a ferry. I'm like notorious for getting seasick. I get sick on a ferry. Can you imagine this churning water and the storm and everything else going across this? And they get out and they have about, 60 pounds of pack. They got to jump in this frigid, churning water. They got to race through flesh-ripping bullets and get to the sand. And there's maybe a little bit of a shady spot once they get to the near the cliffs. And then they got to get up the cliffs. And the whole point was to swarm. And that's one of the bitter realities of what D-Day was all about. Because it was a swarm. And a lot of people knew they were going to their deaths. They were going to their deaths to give the man behind them a chance. Who was giving the man behind him a chance? Who was giving the man behind him a chance? And that's what did it. Sometimes that's the only thing you can do. Run them in and load them up. We're going to talk more about this as we observe the 79th anniversary of D-Day. And later on, we're going to talk to Josh Hawley, Senator Josh Hawley. He's got a book out, and I have the first question I immediately knew I was going to ask him, because his book is about the masculine virtue America needs. Do we have that type of quote-unquote toxic masculinity to do something like this again? Should fate call? It's a big question. Now, looking to more recent times. Basically, a federal law enforcement agency has incriminating evidence on a politician who became POTUS with their help in suppressing news and investigations, and they don't want to turn anything over. And then there's the story of the informant, and this was something that she had shared, Ana Paulina Luna, Representative Ana Paulina Luna. She had said yesterday on Twitter, and I retweeted it the moment I saw it, that the FBI is fearful that the informant who provided the information alleging a $5 million bribery scheme involving Biden would be killed if their identity is revealed. Is this the United States of America? She said, she wrote on Twitter, quote, just left meeting for House oversight. The FBI is afraid their informant will be killed if unmasked based on the info he has brought forward about the Biden family. Now, James Comer had previously described the informant as one of the Bureau's most highly credible human sources, and that he was paid a substantial amount of money by the FBI. He said he's been a part of the Bureau for 13 years, going back to the Obama administration. And so a lot of information, his question to the FBI was, quote, what exactly have you done with the accusation? We're going to talk more about this. I think this is a huge, significant story. Also, in immigration, a Texas sheriff is recommending criminal charges in Florida Governor Ron DeSantis's migrant flights to Martha's Vineyard. Gavin Newsom said he said that DeSantis and other Republican governors who are doing this should be looked at for kidnapping charges. But are they going to say the same thing about Biden? Because Biden legit flew people. He put people on planes and buses. In the dark of night. I'm curious about this. New York City Mayor Eric Adams floated the idea of putting illegal entrants in private residences. Unbelievable. We got a lot of stuff to hit today, including some 2024. If you get the Substack newsletter, my newsletter, Chapter and Verse, there's a piece out for you today. RFK Jr. isn't exactly a political ally. Now, why do I say that, you ask? You got to read the piece that I sent out. We're going to talk about it later today in the program. I have some exciting news for those of you who wish that you could be nearer to Hillsdale College. Now, you can be a part of Hillsdale, no matter where you are in the world. In addition to their free online courses, Hillsdale College has created something new, the Hillsdale College Podcast Network. It allows you to learn even more from Hillsdale anywhere at any time. And on the Hillsdale College Podcast Network, you'll hear podcasts that feature conversations with Hillsdale College faculty, staff, friends, alumni, as well as visiting speakers and authors discussing everything from philosophy to theology to history, economics, politics, and current events. Listen to hundreds of episodes on the network, from the Hillsdale Dialogues to the radio-free Hillsdale Hour to the Larry Arnn Show, all for free. Get informed and entertained at Dana4Hillsdale.com. That's Dana4Hillsdale.com, and learn more about their free online courses and the new Hillsdale College Podcast Network. That's Dana4Hillsdale.com. Hillsdale College, developing minds, changing hearts.
And now, all of the news you would probably miss. It's time for Dana's Quick Five.
So, interesting story. Park Hotels is making a difficult decision to stop paying their CMBS loan, $725 million. They don't want to make payments on their loan anymore. It's scheduled to mature in November of this year. It's Park Hotels and Resorts in San Francisco. It's secured by two of their hotels there in the city, and they plan to remove it from its portfolio. They say that the reason why is they said that they want to reduce. This is literally from their statement. Quote, the CEO, Thomas Baltimore, quote, they want to reduce their current exposure to the San Francisco market. Now more than ever, we believe San Francisco's path to recovery remains clouded and elongated by major challenges. Record high office vacancy, concerns over street conditions, lower return to office than peer cities, weaker than expected citywide convention calendar. All of that is negatively impacting business and leisure demand and will likely significantly reduce compression in the city for the foreseeable future. Because everybody ran it into a hole in the ground. That's why. Whew, whew, whew. I mean, just wow. Also, World War II veterans, those still living, return to Utah Beach to mark D-Day's 79th anniversary. Dozens of the veterans have traveled to Normandy to mark the decisive and deadly assault that led to the liberation of France and Western Europe from Nazi control. There are fewer every year that go. And one veteran said that his job was to, quote, guard an ammunition dump. The first night it got struck, you didn't know where you were to go. Bullets were going all over the place, but we ducked it. Just amazing. And the people there, particularly northern France, are still like hugely appreciative. The great, great allies that have remained friends. I know families that go there and they meet the grandkids of their veteran who served. It's pretty amazing. Also, this so Apple kicked off a whole bunch of other stuff, and which included a new update to Siri where you don't have to say hey anymore to activate it. I always thought that was dumb. Why couldn't you just be like, you know, just say the name? I can't do it because my watch will... I know. Sometimes she talks to me when I don't ask her to. I'm like, shut up. No one's talking to you. Breakthrough in treating one of the deadliest blood cancers. A remarkably effective new immunotherapy can slow blood cancer's disease progress by 74%, excuse me. This is a new significant study. When you see judicial rot running rampant and American companies embracing insanity and wokery, you got to fight back, starting with the way that we spend our money. So for years, big mobile companies have dumped millions into leftist causes, and you know, we just kind of took it because another option didn't exist. Well, now one does. Patriot Mobile is America's only Christian conservative wireless provider, and they offer dependable nationwide coverage on all three major networks, so you get the best possible service in your area without the woke propaganda. And when you switch to Patriot Mobile, you support free speech and religious freedom, the sanctity of life, Second Amendment, and our military veterans and first responders. Their 100% U.S.-based customer service team makes switching easy. Visit patriotmobile.com/Dana or call them at 878-PATRIOT and get free activation today with offer code Dana. Ask about their coverage guarantee as well. patriotmobile.com/Dana or call 878-PATRIOT. patriotmobile.com/Dana or call 878-PATRIOT.
YouTube, Facebook, or DirecTV. If you're looking for the number one afternoon host in the country, you found her. Download the podcast every day to catch up. The Dana Show.
When you say crash retrieval, what do you mean?
These are retrieving non-human origin technical vehicles, you know, call it spacecraft if you will. Non-human, exotic origin, vehicles that have either landed or crashed.
We have spacecraft from another species.
We do, yeah.
How many?
Quite a number.
You're kidding.
No.
The entire American public has been lied to for decades.
Yeah, there's a sophisticated disinformation campaign targeting the U.S. populace, which is extremely unethical and immoral.
You are saying to the human race, for the first time, an official intelligence representative at a high level from the U.S. government is saying publicly, we are not alone.
We're definitely not alone. Absolutely, the data points empirically that we're not alone, yeah.
Oh, yeah, I believe it. Oh, I totally believe it. After everything that we've been through in the past, just go for like 5-6 years. Heck yeah, I believe it. Welcome back to the program. Bottom of this first hour, Dana Lasher, lovable curmudgeon with you. You can listen coast to coast, stream the show. Find us on YouTube or Facebook. Watch the simulcast of the radio program on Channel 347 DirecTV as well. This is the latest that is out. We've been talking about this here and there, on and off for the past several months. Just, you know, when stuff comes out in this great cosmic neighborhood of ours. It's a former Intel official who went whistleblower, and he gave Congress and the Intel community IG, Inspector General, all this classified info about all these deeply covert programs via the debrief.org. And he says that they possess retrieved, intact, and partially intact craft of non-human origin. Now, I just got to interject once here. There's one little voice in my head that's saying, Dana, you mean to tell me that these aliens came from somewhere in deep space, managed to invent ways to safely space travel, maybe even go what we would call light speed or warp speed or whatever, to crash on Earth? You know what I mean? They didn't figure out planet landings. That's where I just have a little bit of, you know,
Some people believe there's portals here on Earth, that there is no real space travel in a craft for a lot of them. There may be some in this particular atmosphere, but as they travel worlds, they're using portals.
Well, mathematically, that's supported.
Right.
Interesting. Oh, it is. Oh, yeah, it is. Uh-huh. I made the mistake of saying that couldn't possibly happen one time in front of my youngest, who is this math and science whiz, and then he started talking numbers and symbols to me, and I just didn't even know what it meant anymore. So, they say all of this has been illegally withheld from Congress. So, he filed a complaint saying that he's already suffered illegal retaliation for this disclosure. The whistleblower is 36 years old, David Charles Grush. Decorated former combat officer in Afghanistan. He's a veteran of the Neo Geospatial Intelligence Agency, a thing I didn't even know we had. Right. Oh, we have that? The National Geospatial Thinger Agency probably, intelligence?
Probably a lot we don't know.
They also have the National Reconnaissance Office. That's a new thing. Oh, and he was the reconnaissance office's representative to something that we have called the Unidentified Aerial Phenomena Task Force. Or what they call UAPs. That's what they're trying to call UFOs, is UAP. Yeah. Unidentified Aerial Phenomena. I would say, weird thing that's alien in the sky. I'd just point it and be like, that's alien. That's. So he was their co-lead for UAP analysis and is representative of the task force. So, you know, he seems like a pretty believable dude, right? There must be a lot there for someone to go, yeah, you know what, we got to tell people. Now, some people might say, well, if they exist, then where are they? Well, hi, have you seen us? We are a people that lose our minds over syrup. Okay? We lost it over who was on the butter box. Why, if you are an alien, why the hell would you want anything to do with us? I wouldn't. I wouldn't even be in this neighborhood. This is why, I've said this for years, they lock their little alien space doors when they fly past. Just saying, because we're weird. We're nuts. We are ridiculous people. We are a ridiculous species. We're going bananas down here. So he's got a lawyer. This guy's lawyered up. And he said that there have been all these recoveries of partial fragments through and up to intact vehicles that have been made for decades. And so he says, yeah, there are some intact. We've got them. Yeah, we're looking at them. Are we reverse engineering them, I wonder?
I think we've been doing it for a long time.
You think so?
Oh, yeah.
I mean, I hope we are. I mean, if we got some alien ships, I mean, I hope we are. Jeez. Can I just also add one thing here? And we got other stuff to get. But I think this would be a huge story if everything wasn't such a, oh, I don't know, say dumpster fire. Only now could you introduce a story. You could go out and be like, hey, aliens are real, guys. We got one of their spaceships. No one bats an eye. No one's saying anything. This is crazy. If this was in the 80s, I think people would be going nuts. You'd have people making mashed potato towers again. Well, it was just one movie, but still, you get my drift. I don't know. I mean, I hope that it's an alien and not space travel. So let me just put this out here, and then we got other stuff we're going to hit. But let me just entertain me, just indulge me for a moment. My youngest is like, well, what if it's someone who's coming from the future? What if they figured out, you know, time travel, and it's someone from the future? And both myself and my youngest think that that's probably one of the biggest letdowns we've ever heard. I would be horribly disappointed if it was some stupid human from the future. I'm sorry, but that's, no, I'm not impressed. Be an alien, right? I've seen enough of humans. I'm done with you. Bring me an alien, right? Wouldn't you be too? You'd be like, wait, you're just from the future?
I would be.
Gosh dang.
I think it's fair to say I'd be equally impressed.
I don't know that I would be.
I don't know.
I'd be like, go the hell back.
I think I'd be equally impressed.
No one wants you. Go.
The future?
Yeah.
Tell me about how you got here.
I don't want to know. I like want there to be some mystery.
It's the same question I'd ask the aliens.
We have enough dumb people here. I don't need any from the future coming back here. So, no. I don't want any of it. I will find your little portal and I will resist. I'd much rather have an alien. You know, make it spicy. Come on. Like, I'm so tired of dealing with other humans. Just, you know, it'd be better if it's an alien. Just saying. I don't care if it's friendly or not. I just want another alien. I don't want another alien. So they said insiders are taking risks coming forward. This guy's been in intel for, I mean, he seems like a legit dude. I got to say. So if we have spacecraft that we're keeping somewhere, the first place I'm thinking of is Area 51. You know, I did a whole thing. I have weird things. So one of my other bucket list vacations, in addition to going to the north of France and seeing the World War II, you know, all the beaches, etc., is literally just taking my picture in front of the gates at Area 51 and running away before their truck can run me over. It's all I want to do. I don't want to go and see nothing. I don't want to hurt no installations. Just want my picture by the gate. That's a family Christmas card right there, in my view, right? I'll just put some Santa hats on or something. But I read about how to do that, what kind of vehicle you got. I've read so much into that. It's crazy. It's probably unhealthy, but it's interesting. But that's probably where they're doing it. You know that? That's where they did all the nuclear testing. You can go and find, you know, the house that's in the video that you see in all these music videos. Well, you kids today don't know because they do music videos anymore? I sound like I'm 90. Do they have the music videos anymore?
It's on the TikToks.
It's on the TikToks. Golly, I feel like Ingalls Wilder here, Maul Ingalls. So I'm just saying it's probably, if I was going to put some alien ships somewhere, I'd put it where it's real cold. Nobody wants to go up there or down there. Or I'd put it out there by where they did all the nuke stuff, all the nuke tests and all that stuff. That house that you see, and by the way, I was mentioning in all those music videos, that house was out there. That's where they did it. I found it. I have it marked on my Google Maps as a place I'd like to visit. For real, I'm not even lying. That's an actual thing. I love doing that. So I'm just saying, now they have the National Air and Space Intelligence Center that's headquartered at Wright-Patterson Air Force Base. That's the Department of Defense's primary Air Force source for foreign air and space threat analysis, which I didn't even know. And I looked at the building and it looked like something Iron Man would make. What's his face? Tony Stark. It looks like a Tony Stark building. I'm waiting for an Avenger to come out the front door. I just find all of this fascinating. I totally believe that they would lie to us. I'm just assuming that aliens exist. God never said they didn't. I'm just assuming that they exist and that we've been lied to. So there you go. So I'm not going to be surprised when they come out and they're like, hello, Earthlings. You know, I'm not going to be surprised. Just going to take it and roll. Did they lie to you about a guy with his crack-smoking McCooker face son with all his kids? They lie to you about that. They legit tried to undermine an entire election about that. Why wouldn't they lie to you about this? If they're going to lie to you about the dumb things, you know they're going to lie to you about the bigger things, right? You know they are. So of course I believe that. Of course I do. So some of the other things that we're looking at, and although I really would just want to sit here and talk about aliens, honestly, for the rest of the show. See, look, this is my point. You have Republicans launching contempt process against FBI Director Wray after they viewed this Biden bribery document. And one of the top investigators in this case says the file involves all the shell companies and it shows a pattern of money laundering. If you were legit going to have the government lie to you about this so they could protect a candidate to help his ascension to elected office, why would they not lie to you about, you know, the little alien people? Right? I totally believe it. What if it's an alien going to run for president? What if? But he's in a people suit. I'm just, you know, just speculating here. Just, you know. Well, it would be. That's why he's struggling so. Like, it's not working out. I don't know. I'm just thinking out loud here. Aren't there people, and I say this facetiously, I am entertained about the people who are like, ah, it's a body double. So I got a friend who turned into Charlie from It's Always Sunny in Philadelphia with his, like, crazy wall. And he's like, yeah, it's a body double, and here's why. And I'm like, you've got to stop with this. I'm like, it's not, he got old. That's why his face looks different. I think he had a stroke and he got old. That does stuff to you. It's like, I don't know. I've seen lots of people who've had strokes and get old. They look the same. I'm like, well, I didn't know you were an expert on strokes and getting old. I think it's still the same guy. I just think that he is completely, completely compromised by his health issues.
I'm still on the fence about it.
Kane's on the fence about it. A friend of mine totally thinks it's a body double. Now because I've said this, he probably is like, you know what? That makes total sense. It's an alien in a body double suit. It's what it is. It's like Men in Black. It's in an Edgar suit. Just saying. But serious issues here. Can I just say, this also makes me mad. I could be talking about damn aliens all day. Instead, I got to talk about this godforsaken family and all the money laundering and all the hooker McCrack smoking and everything else. We have to sit here. We have to deal with our government lying to us about this when we should be focusing on the bigger things our government is lying to us about. This is just depressing. We have a lot more on the way, folks, including, look, I understand that RFK Jr. might seem like a less crazy Democrat, but he's not exactly a political ally, and I'm going to explain why coming up. Also, a bunch of white lefty women booed a black senator running for president. If you guessed it was The View's office and Tim Scott, you're right.
Catch The Dana Show noon to 3 p.m. Eastern on DirecTV Channel 347.
Like sands through the hourglass, so are the days of the United States.
I was in Batman. I played the kettle drums. I played the vibraphone. Like I said, I was in high school band, so you're looking at the future, right? A bunch of white presidents.
Oh, I know. I was telling you that while I was muted, Kane.
Kane's
like, you gotta hit the mute button, as I'm telling him something I cannot say on air. As I totally not be good. You gotta hit that mute button.
Don't say it.
Oh my gosh. If you guessed that was our vice president of the United States, you'd be correct. Was she going through all of the instruments that she's played or what?
Yes.
I'm not impressed unless she says she played the theremin. I played the air instrument.
Yeah.
That's what I said, Kane. What you said in Slack is what I said.
I know.
Uh-huh. Type it in there again. Let's see if it stays in Slack.
I'm just acknowledging I heard you. Come
okay.
on, stop.
Yeah, that's all right. Boy, you're getting really...
You're the testy one. No.
I'm just sitting here just, you know, watching, chilling, you know, hanging with the peeps. They were all wondering what you were talking about. I'm just, you know, speaking for them. That's all.
Did you notice Kamala said to the students that she's looking at a bunch of vice presidents? Apparently none of them can be president. They're just vice presidents, all of the students.
Yeah, why would...
Is that inspirational to you?
That sounds... No. No, it doesn't.
I'm looking at a bunch of vice presidents.
Maybe one day, like me, you could get added to the ticket to check some boxes, even though you totally don't qualify in this office. She laughs like in her deranged way. Just... Alien. There you go. We just figured it out.
There it is.
I'm saying.
There it is.
Gosh. I want that to be real. I really want it to be real. I cannot leave that topic. I swear I'm going to, but I'm just, you know, can we... I had this thing, because my friend Dave Burge, who's one of the funniest people I've ever met, because, you know, Apple, did you guys see the... Tim Cook tweeted, "Welcome to the era of spatial computing with Apple Vision Pro. You've never seen anything like this before." And it's this dork who puts his headset on, and, like, all of the Apple icons are in front of him. That looks annoying. So, it's... In order to do the Tony Stark with all the screens in the air stuff, you got to wear the goggles. You have to wear the goggles. You got goggle hair, and you got to wear it on your face. They're going to put lines on your face. That looks awful. And then my friend Dave Burge said that he was excited about this, and he said that all he needs is Apple Socks Pro and eye pants for the total Borg lifestyle experience. That's all he needs. Right? You can just sit in your, someone else said, you can just sit in your fluid-filled pod and rest blissfully in your, well, jacked into the Matrix. They keep talking about the metaverse, which is glorified Second Life. It's glorified Sims and Second Life. It's dork stuff. It is, the metaverse is where the dorks go. Look at me. Look at my avatar. Look at my little person. One of my favorite things to watch on YouTube is this guy called Daniel, and he goes and crashes all these, like, simulations. And he loves going after the people in, like, Second Life and all that. It's hysterical. That's the metaverse. That's what that's what it'll be. Stay with us. We have a whole other hour on the way. Senator Josh Hawley coming up later on, our third hour, too. Back after this.
When Napoleon lay at Boulogne for a year with his flat-bottomed boats, and his grand army, he was told by someone, there are bitter weeds in England. There are certainly a great many more of them since the British Expeditionary Force returned. Sir, I have myself full confidence that if all do their duty, if nothing is neglected, and if the best arrangements are made, as they are being made, we shall prove ourselves once more able to defend our island home, to ride out the storm of war, and to outlive the menace of tyranny, if necessary for years, if necessary alone. At any rate, that is what we are going to try to do. That is the resolve of His Majesty's government, every man of them. That is the will of Parliament and the nation, the British Empire and the French Republic, linked together in their cause and in their need, will defend to the death their native soil, aiding each other like good comrades to the utmost of their strength. We shall go on to the end. We shall fight in France. We shall fight on the seas and oceans. We shall fight with growing confidence and growing strength in the air. We shall defend our island, whatever the cost may be. We shall fight on the beaches. We shall fight on the landing grounds. We shall fight in the fields and in the streets. We shall fight in the hills. We shall never surrender. And if, which I do not for a moment believe, this island or a large part of it were subjugated and starving, then our empire beyond the seas, armed and guarded by the British fleet, would carry on the struggle until, in God's good time, the new world, with all its power and might, steps forth to the rescue and the liberation of the old.
That speech makes me want to run through a wall. As Churchill, the famous speech, "We will fight on the beaches," as he rallied the Brits in World War II. This is ahead of D-Day. The 79th observance, 79 years ago. And we've been starting every hour with the program of this program today, as we talk about every year, because I think this was, as I said, one of the brightest moments of human history. Just the selflessness, the sacrifice, the stories. And I've been sharing with you some stories because I'm a huge World War II buff. And we have a long family history, big family history in World War II. And I think that we have to learn from what happened, see what the greatest generation did, and apply it to how we can make things better today. So welcome to the second hour, top of the second hour. Your lovable curmudgeon, Dana Lash, here with you. 79 years ago. Now, at this time, my husband's grandfather was in Normandy. My grandfather was on the USS Alabama in the Pacific, completely on opposite sides of the world from each other. One was fighting to help liberate France and was what they called a dogface soldier. He ended up getting wounded and he woke up in what he thought was a German POW camp because a German nurse who had been captured by Allied forces was tending to him, and he damn near lost his mind. And then he realized he was okay. But my grandfather was on USS Alabama all the way in the Pacific. So he was out there at sea when everything was happening. And just amazing, you know, where members of your family were. I think every American family had somebody. And this almost didn't happen. One of my favorite stories from World War II is a story about a unit that most people don't know about. And this unit that most people do not know about helped contribute and were absolutely just required for the success of D-Day. For the Germans to believe that the Allied forces weren't going to go where they were supposed to go or weren't going to go where they actually were going. They had to make them believe a different narrative. It was the Deception Unit, a.k.a. the Ghost Army. And this is one of the craziest and most amazing stories of World War II. It is a time when you had people from Hollywood. You had people who worked in film and in radio and on stage and in fashion and in costumes, and everyone was working together. Hollywood was working together with, you had people from Hollywood who were working with families who had sent their sons from their farms in middle America to go and help liberate Europe and stop the Nazi spread. Everyone worked together, shoulder to shoulder. I don't know of any other time in history where this has happened. No one had any agenda except to beat the Nazis. They were activated on January 20th, 1944. The 23rd Headquarters Special Troops, a deception unit, tactical deception unit, and the first in U.S. Army history, called the Ghost Army. 82 officers, 1,023 men under the command of Army veteran Colonel Harry Reeder. It was a top secret unit. And they were capable of simulating two entire divisions, 30,000 men. They made the Nazis think that they were 30,000 men. They used visual, they used radio, every sonic, everything to fool German forces in the final year of World War II. I can't emphasize the importance of their role in pulling off D-Day enough. There's an exhibit there at the National World War II Museum. They had an exhibit out called The Ghost Army, The Combat Con Artist of World War II. There's also a really great documentary about this, and there are a couple of really good books about this. I have one of them, and I'll put that in a separate email that I'll send out to you subscribers later. They use things like inflatable tanks. You got to see some of these pictures from, you know, the sky. And even from away, maybe in a tree line, they look real if you're not, but right up close. But this was their skill set. This is what gets me. They didn't have anything heavier than 50 cal. They went out there and they did this. They didn't have anything heavier than 50 cal. And they took part in 22 large scale deceptions in Europe from Normandy to the Rhine River. And the bulk of the unit arrived in England in May of 1944, right before D-Day. And they had very carefully selected artists, engineers, some soldiers, some draftees. And then, you know who else they had? They had famous people. You guys remember Bill Blass? I was asking Kane this. You know, the guy, I just remember in the 90s, it was Bill Blass clothing. And he was in the Ghost Army. Ellsworth Kelly was in the Ghost Army. A photographer, Art Kane, was in the Ghost Army. They had a lot of people from West Point and former Army Specialized Training Program participants. They were all assigned to this 23rd unit. They said this unit had one of the highest IQs in the entire Army with an average of 119. They faked radio traffic. They faked sound effects. They even had made-up generals. The Germans bought every bit of it. They used all of their skills, their talent, to create these illusions, and they saved thousands of lives. They were sworn to secrecy. They couldn't tell their families. They couldn't tell their wives. And everything was classified. And there, not until 1985, a piece in the Smithsonian, because there was not a single peep about the Ghost Army. There was one newspaper article, like right after, according to the National World War II Museum. There was one newspaper article right after, but that was kind of it. And nothing was said about this until 1985. From a Smithsonian article, because it was classified still officially all the way up until the 90s. They literally created theater across Europe to manipulate Hitler into taking his armies in different places, to making them think that they were going somewhere where they actually weren't going. And they were finally only recently given a congressional gold medal. I mean, they had artillery that couldn't fire. Their tanks couldn't move, and they were able. It was called a traveling road show. They went up and down the front lines impersonating real people. They were at Battle of the Bulge. They had 20 missions throughout from 1944 to 1945, and they were a major. It was a major success. They said they were inspired by British subterfuge in North Africa, so they created the Ghost Army. Is this not amazing? They would have military drills on speakers that they buried and they hid, and you could hear them 50 miles away, and they would blare pre-recorded sounds, and they would trick off. I mean, it was the stuff that they did is amazing. Absolutely amazing. They created, they had a 17-man platoon that was on Omaha Beach. Four members joined D-Day at Normandy. 17-man platoon came ashore at Omaha. 8 days later, they made dummy artillery placements, and they drew tons of fire from the Germans. Large-scale deceptions. They had 50 dummy tanks. They had sound trucks to mimic the sound of the tanks. They had them convinced. They deceived the Germans about where Patton's Third Army was. It is amazing what they did. I mean, you've got to read about it. There's a really good book called The Ghost Army of World War II by Rick Beyer. It's great. And he also worked on a documentary about it. That's the book I have. I highly suggest that you get it. It's fantastic. It's such an amazing part of history. But that's when everyone worked together. The farmer who went to war, the sound director from Hollywood, the stage designer from New York. That was unity. That was everyone coming together to fight a common enemy. Do you think they agreed with each other on everything? Do you think that it mattered at that time in that place? No. That's why they're the greatest generation. Amazing stuff. So many amazing stories to come out of the destruction and death. Now, as we transition to a new topic here, 2024, I have a piece up about RFK Jr. I think that people need to realize that we don't have a political savior. And I know that some of our friends on the right, and I don't say this disparagingly, they get very excited if they see someone who might be able to convince some people on the left and some people on the right to unite and vote for them. I understand that it is a thing. They love this. It's a long-fabled candidate. But this candidate doesn't exist and never will. So coming up, I want to get into... I listened to the Spaces interview that Robert F. Kennedy Jr. did yesterday with Elon Musk and David Sachs. Very similar to the one that Florida Governor Ron DeSantis did. I didn't get to listen live because we were wrapping up radio production. So I went back and I listened and I paid special attention to his remarks on gun control. We got an issue, folks. We have more than one issue. But his words were cagey there. And we need to have a little conversation about this. And we're going to do that here very shortly. You don't want to miss.
And now, all of the news you would probably miss. It's time for Dana's Quick Five.
So this interesting story from Reuters, Taiwan and the U.S. to sign first deal under the new trade framework. Remember, there was an agreement that was made with previous lawmakers in some of those visits. Taiwan and the United States are going to sign this deal on Thursday, according to both governments, boosting ties between the two while tensions increase with China. The talks began. This was after Taiwan had been excluded from the Pan-Asian Trade Initiative, so nobody would make China mad. Well, now they said this agreement's going to be signed. China's going to be mad. I don't care. Goodness, that's a whole other issue. This headline, U.S. women's soccer team lost 12-0 to a team of men. Were they retired men? That's what I read, that they were retired. I'm just saying. It was in Wrexham, their soccer tournament. Lindsey Harris made some big saves. I thought it was they were playing retired men because it was a...
Just normal men.
What you mean? We're just innocent men. It was a 7-on-7 squad for Wrexham AFC. If you haven't watched that Wrexham, that's Ryan Reynolds and McElhinney. They both, Reynolds and McElhinney, purchased the team in Wrexham, Wrexham AFC, and they've been fighting for promotion. It's actually an amazing, amazing story. It's like a real life Ted Lasso in a way. But yeah, they got beaten. You know, just saying. Let's see, Lululemon's CEO addressed firing employees who tried to stop shoplifters. He said it's only merchandise. Okay. They fired two employees who called police as three masked men robbed their Georgia store location. They said that the store has a zero tolerance policy on engaging thieves. They fired Jennifer Ferguson and Rachel Rogers, a pair of workers who confronted them, called police at their Peachtree City location. It was in the Atlanta metropolitan area. They said, it's the safety of our team. It puts that, they were saying that it makes a dangerous situation. It's only merchandise. They said that we're not supposed to call the police or talk about it. That's what one of the assistant manager had said. I think that's kind of weird. And also, when you have four masked dudes enter the store, are you sure that they're only just going to rob people?
Exactly.
That's the other thing. Like, what do you expect? So, like, it's only merchandise, but what if they're attacking? I mean, are they supposed to say, are you just robbing us? Are they supposed to conduct, like, a survey before the crime commences in order to gauge what the intention is? In Japan, people are signing up for classes to teach them how to smile after the masks, because apparently people wear masks too long. No joke. That's a real story. Stick with us.
Between Twitter, Facebook, or any of your social media, there's a lot of information out there. That's why your lovable curmudgeon is here to help you make sense of it all, live or on demand. The Dana Show.
What about politicians, people who deny, who express skepticism?
They're selling out the public trust. And, I think those guys who are doing the Koch brothers' bidding, and who are against all the evidence of the rational mind, are saying that global warming doesn't exist, that they are contemptible human beings, and that, I wish that there were a law you could punish them under. I don't think there's a law that you can punish those politicians under, but I think the Koch brothers should be prosecuted for reckless endangering? Absolutely. That's a criminal offense, and they ought to be serving time for it.
So that's a flashback audio of RFK Jr., who he was talking about global warming and climate there. And in his remarks, which if you sign up to chapter and verse over at Substack, you got all of this morning. In his remarks, he was saying that global warming deniers were traitors, and that companies like the Koch Industries and Exxon be, quote, put to corporate death. Seems a little different from how he sounded in his Twitter spaces yesterday. Welcome back to the program. Bottom of the second hour, Dana Lash with you. RFK Jr. did this Twitter spaces yesterday with Elon Musk and David Sachs, and similar to what DeSantis did a couple of weeks ago. And I went back and listened to it. It's very long. But I went back. I was on radio finishing production stuff while it was winding down. So I went back and listened. And I particularly wanted to listen to his stuff about gun control, because I saw on Twitter that people were saying, oh, my gosh, he's this big Second Amendment. He said he was a constitutional maximalist. And I thought, what? Because that sounded, in that audio, I know the RFK Jr. who talks like that. That's the RFK Jr. that I have come to know. I know the RFK Jr. who denied the election results of 2004. I know the RFK Jr. who thought that climate denial was a crime. That's kind of the guy that I know. So I was shocked to hear that was see some of those headlines. Now I want to play this for you. This is one. There's two parts of this. This is part of his Twitter Spaces conversation. I think this is the one where he was talking about the Constitution and consensus. Let's listen.
We have one every 21 hours. The one thing that we have that's different than anybody in the world is the amount of psychiatric drugs our children are taking and our people are taking. And we need to look at that. And NIH should have done that years ago, but they will not do it. And they'll block other people from doing it because they're working not for us, but for the pharmaceutical industry. And this is their major profit center today. And so nobody wants to hear none of those, you know, the pharma does not want to hear about any problems with SSRIs. But I will do those studies immediately when I get into office. And we're going to get the truth. It's something, you know, guns, the proliferation of guns, clearly abet violence. But anybody who tells you that they can remove enough guns, AR-15s or whatever, by tinkering at the margins and get to the kind of the situation that they have in Western Europe is pulling your leg. It's not going to happen. We need to look now at other solutions. And the only way we're ultimately going to get gun controls in this country is through consensus, and that consensus cannot happen when we're all at each other's throats.
So he's mentioning, you know, the SSRIs and the relationship between psychiatric drugs and violence, how that should be studied. I think that's good. But then he says, and I think this might be in the other soundbite, he said he's not going to take away anybody's guns. He says, I'm a constitutional maximalist, and the issue's been settled by the Supreme Court. But then you heard the very end of that, what he just said. He said, the only way we're going to get gun controls in this country is through consensus, and that consensus cannot happen when we're all at each other's throats. Okay, so that's bad. His remark about the SSRIs and the relationship between that and violence, that's good. His remark about consensus and the Constitution is bad. And that's because consensus doesn't determine the extent to which we are allowed to exercise our natural rights. It's weird for him to say, and he said this in the same discussion, that he's a constitutional maximalist, but only up to the point of consensus. These are two irreconcilable statements. One cancels out the other. So he is not articulate here. I do not feel confident in his answer. I do not feel at ease over his answer. It sounds like he is trying to dress up a position of gun control by saying that he supports the Constitution. But then when you add consensus, well, the framers were incredibly clear, particularly in the Federalist Papers. Your natural rights are not subject to consensus. The end. That's all there is to it. And there are a lot of people, including some Republicans out there, that I just was shocked to see running like sort of like promos for him. Now, sometimes there's friendly fire, and I had some words. I always get along with, you know, I always disagree with even like-minded people, you know, unless it's very dumb, in which case, you know, I believe that sheep, you know, protect sheep, but the wolves get the full force. And I don't like, you know, I don't like to see wolf-like behavior like that and people, you know, pushing goofy stuff. So, yeah, that explains some things. But this guy's not a savior. I mean, he seems less crazy than other Democrats because I think he understands what turns voters off, right? The issue, though, is consensus. He's also had some, I mean, I put up some of the scrub tweets that he had. I mean, if you go to the links, and I had the links where these tweets were, they've been deleted. He called gun owners terrorists. He called gun owner organizations terror groups who turned the Second Amendment into a suicide pact for our children. That's what he tweeted on February 15th, 2018. He still has some of them up. The February 17th one, 2018, right after Parkland, that's still up. So you've got to be able to answer to that. I mean, that's the thing. One of my favorite quotes from Reagan was his quip that my 80% friend is not my 20% enemy. I mean, measuring political friendship or the strength of an ally, you have to have some sort of measure. And it should include more than just one issue. He's good on the virus vax stuff and big pharma. But on this was no clarification. I mean, when you, and then when he starts getting out of the realm of virus vax and big pharma, he starts to sound like Democrats. I mean, when he's talking about putting global, when he's saying global warming deniers are traitors and that, you know, they and coal companies should, quote, be in jail for all of eternity. He literally wrote an article titled Jailing Climate Deniers that is on way back, but it's been memory hold on the internet. Now, some people are like, oh, well, you know, Dana, he's changed. He should be given grace. Some of this was not even 10 years ago, by the way. Now, I sincerely hope that he's changing or is on a pathway to change, and that's all well and good. Were he not running for the highest office in the land? And there's the difference. I am always pro people changing their minds to like-minded positions, but without clarification or acknowledgement of their previous position and explanation as to why they changed, it's meaningless. Nobody gets a pass from explaining to the voting public whether or not they changed their views. Nobody gets a pass. This is politics. We are owed this. You owe us explanations. And instead of downplaying people's concerns or viciously berating people who raise them on social media, his supporters maybe should kind of encourage him to speak concisely and clearly to clear up any confusion. Not every single person that has a question also has ill intent, okay? And it's irrational to assume that everybody who asks a question does so motivated by ill intent. I'm so damn tired of this. I bit somebody's head off yesterday because they assumed the same thing of me. Wait a minute, I want to know if I should be praising this guy or, like, you know, being sus. I want to know. And there, you know, like I said, there's this fabled candidate that some people have convinced themselves exists. Somebody who's going to convince enough people on both sides to vote for them. That candidate does not exist. That candidate never will exist. Stop. The left has moved so far left, they can't even identify women anymore. The right is just a combination of, you know, dear heaven, let's not. Can we buy products that aren't covered in rainbows? And then the new natcons who think that history began the day that they were born. And then you have the middle, which is this vast wasteland of these poor, cynical, shell-shocked voters who are far more likely to vote for whomever promises first to never run another political ad. Now, like I said, RFK Jr. makes some very good points on Big Pharma and the virus vax, but that does not make him a political ally. It doesn't. Definitely doesn't satisfy concerns about the other things that he has said. I mean, yes, he looks more attractive to independents and right-leaning voters because he just doesn't look nuts. But he's, I want to make this point too, merely withdrawing to an earlier version of progressivism doesn't solve the problem. You're just buying time. So merely receding to an earlier stage of Democrat, one that was less crazy and isn't the crazy one now, that doesn't change anything. You're buying yourself time. That's it. I mean, he's still a Democrat. He sounds like them when he talks about any other issue. I wrote on Substack this morning, if hell froze over and he were the Democrat nominee, and then if hell thawed and froze over again and he won the presidency, he would still be a Democrat representing Democrats, strategizing with Democrats, doing the bidding of Democrats. You do not change the soul of a party simply by replacing the head of it. As we learned from 2016 to 2020, this is politics 101, and you will not walk back decades of hardcore, now communism, with one guy and one election. This is a generational fight. I've said this for over 10 years. It is a generational battle. This is not a one election and done thing. And instead of expending all this energy, some people who do this, instead of expending all of this energy thinking that, oh, this election will solve it. No, you need to dig in and work harder and teach your damn kids to resist and defeat cultural Marxism. That's what you should be doing. You should be preparing for this and treating it like a generational cultural battle instead of a one and done election victory. And if you don't, you'll lose. And you won't just lose for you. You're going to lose for your kids and you're going to lose for your grandkids. A politician is never going to fight as hard for your family as you will yourself. Stop outsourcing it. We have more on the way. We have Florida Man coming up. And why would we believe the CIA? Washington Post has a story about the Nord Stream pipeline. Did you see this? Now, Washington Post reports that the U.S. had intelligence of a detailed Ukrainian plan to attack the Nord Stream pipeline. First, it was, oh, the United States did it. First, they said the Ukrainians did it. Then they're like, well, wait, maybe it was the U.S. Well, wait, now back, it's the Ukrainians, but the U.S. knew. Do you believe them? I literally don't believe a single thing that comes out of one singular agency anymore. I don't. In fact, if they told us the aliens were real, I don't even know if I'd believe them just because they said it. I would, even if they were real and they finally came clean, I would think, no, actually, now I don't believe you. Show me them aliens. The alien would have to come out and like talk, hold a press conference. I'm not kidding. It would have to do that at this point.
It's his life mission to make bad decisions. It's time for Florida Man.
All right, so first up, we got a few stories here for you. A Naples man capable of evading high-speed pursuit sticker was arrested for an unsuccessful evasion of cops in high-speed pursuit. Kind of didn't work. Collier County, Florida, 29-year-old Florida man motorcyclist faces multiple charges. He tried to flee from deputies over the weekend. And he was also apparently, he had the sticker, as I just said, capable of evading high-speed pursuit on his bike. And they followed him in a helicopter. He was running lights and all this stuff. He was going 110 miles per hour. And they finally got him and arrested him. So he was charged with felony high-speed reckless fleeing and eluding and resisting arrest. So that sticker was a lie. Let's see. A Florida man barges into a stranger's home claiming that he's a ghost and you can't see him. He is stark naked. There is also, I hate to say, there's also video. Yeah, so we can't really play the video because you know, it's one of them doorbell cams. But he gets out there and he's like, he shows up, he barges into the home. It was in Fort Myers, Florida. And they did call police. He could actually, in fact, be seen. I don't have any other updates on him, but good heavens. Fox 35, a Florida man, I get nervous when dogs are involved. So this guy crashes his Ford Ranger into a fire hydrant. He's got his dog with him. And then when the police show up, he tries to get the officer's gun, but instead grabs his Jimmy. No, for real. That actually happened. Bunnell, Florida. A Florida man was arrested for allegedly crashing into a fire hydrant at a Flagler County racetrack. That's a gas station. And for trying to attack the arresting deputy. Damn, that mugshot is hardcore. This man's eye is swelled shut, and he's grimacing, if you can't see it, for the people who are not watching the simulcast. It was about 3:50-something on a Thursday, last Thursday. Frank Clement Jr., he was standing near the trunk and appeared intoxicated. He said he'd been drinking. He was advancing towards the deputy. They showed up after he ran into the hydrant. There was all this water flowing in the street. They said that Clement advanced towards the deputy in a threatening manner and then battered the deputy. That battery's, you know, grabbing someone by forcefully grabbing him, according to a press release. Now, witnesses said it looks like Clement was trying to reach for the deputy's gun, but he missed it by a little bit. Grabbed the Jimmy. That's all I'm saying. So he was charged with driving under the influence, with property damage, aggravated battery on a law enforcement officer, resisting an officer with violence, and also reckless driving. Now, the one thing, sadly, that is not included in this is any kind of update about the dog, because that's really what I care about. That's what we all care about. Yeah, I mean, goodness. And then, oh, gosh, what? I don't even know what if I, I don't, oh, I don't, can't read this one. I can't read this one at all. We had the one with the guy with the box over his head. We had that one already. But I'm telling you, I do want to know about the dog. I think I'm like trying to find out any kind of updates on the dog, and I can't. Like, stop speeding and being drunk in your car with dogs and kids and anybody else. Just don't. Tomorrow I'll tell you about the guy who got felony assault over a chick. Well, actually, while using chicken wings as a weapon. That's like a popular thing. Have you noticed in this segment? True. Stick with us. Third hour next.
My fellow Americans, last night when I spoke with you about the fall of Rome, I knew at that moment the troops of the United States and our allies were crossing the channel in another and greater operation. It has come to pass with success thus far. And so, in this poignant hour, I ask you to join with me in prayer. Almighty God, our sons, pride of our nation, this day have set upon a mighty endeavor, a struggle to preserve our republic, our religion, and our civilization, and to set free a suffering humanity.
It's probably the only time I'll play FDR, but that's an amazing, that's right before kicking off D-Day. And of course, today is the 79th anniversary of one of the most amazing feats in human selflessness and sacrifice. Welcome back to the program. Dana Lash here with you, top of this third hour. Later on in this hour, Senator Josh Hawley will join us. And we've been starting off every hour, and we tend to, you know, do this. I like to go over some stories and really interesting, maybe lesser known things about World War II. I've read a ton of stuff on World War II. I think like a lot of you out there. I don't think there's a family that doesn't have some sort of history. Didn't have family that were not in World War II. And we had grandfathers that were on either side of the world, either end of the world, one fighting Imperial Japan, the other fighting the Nazis, and even more who were other family members who different parts of Europe and elsewhere. It's amazing. It's amazing the scope of it. And there are so many singular stories of just of heroism. And, you know, we were talking about the Ghost Army last hour, and we were talking about the Mad Piper on Sword Beach the hour before that. One of the other stories that I think is fascinating is the story of this guy that they called Garbo, Juan Pujol Garcia. He was known as Agent Garbo. It was like, and this is from the National Archives, some of the story. Apparently he wanted to work for British intelligence. He hated him some Nazis, and they were like, you don't have any connections and you don't have any experience. And so he actually apparently decided to just do it all on his own, and without any, just from sheer imagination. He was incredibly inventive. He was a Spanish spy. He acted as a double agent, and he was very loyal to Britain. MI5 has a really good write-up on him as well. He's also faked his death for like 36 years. I mean, this guy is, I mean, it is amazing. He went from a chicken farmer to a double agent, and he is considered to be another asset in how D-Day happened. I mean, his story is, a lot of these stories, they'd make for great movies. They're just crazy. But that's the sheer force and will of people. So he was like, well, I don't have experience or connection. So he went ahead and he just contacted the Nazis and was like, I want to spy on the British. And he wanted to earn a spot as a double agent, but he didn't have any formal training, but he had just a killer imagination. And so his contacts, there were like 27 of them. He made it up to make them seem like they were real people with real backgrounds, and the information that he sent to the Germans about what was happening in London, it was gathered from like ads, anything that he had out in the public at his disposal. He never once set foot in the UK. He just used his imagination. The Nazis never actually suspected this guy of being a double agent because of his tactics. He purposefully sent intel late to the Germans, warning of like Operation Torch landings in North Africa. He received the response, we are sorry they arrived too late, but your last reports were magnificent. So the British labeled him Garbo after Greta Garbo because she was so mystifying. And they used his established network. They transmitted over 500 radio messages to Berlin. They helped also trick the Nazis, and he was a double agent. I mean, this guy's, he's a hero. A chicken farmer who wanted to do more and had an amazing imagination. He ended up joining up with MI6, and he became very well known because of how imaginative he was. And after they saw what he did with the counterintel and betraying Germany, they were fascinated by him, and they began a working relationship. So it's very, it's a long story because he also was part of the D-Day misinformation campaign. So there's a lot of crossover between like Ghost Army and then some of the stuff that Agent Garbo did. I mean, this is just so many of these stories. This is somebody's grandfather, somebody's uncle, somebody's family member, right? And it sounds like they're members of the Kingsmen, the movie. It's wild. There's so many stories like this. Like a lot of the fake leaflets and the propaganda. What they, the Germans were so hungry for information, and we were, I mean, as I got to say, they, their propaganda and in trying to subjugate their the people into doing what they want to, that's one thing. But the way that the Allies fought that in the war of information, it's pretty damn spectacular. That's one of my favorite, the propaganda portion of the American History Museum is one of my favorite things to go to. One of my, it's, I took my oldest son there, his first time to DC when he was young. I was like, this is really where a lot of this began. And everybody was working together. I mean, there's, we could sit here and do really the rest of this hour and then tomorrow's show and the rest of this week on this. I mean, the Violet Plan, there's so many, stories. I'll include some of the what do they call them? The parachute and padre. I mean, there's all kinds of stuff. All of these people working together to make D-Day happen. And a lot of your family members out there as well. Just amazing. Now, we were talking a little bit earlier about 2024. Because one of the things that I think that I have in my mind when I'm looking at everything we're going to be facing after 2024, what we have to deal with after the election isn't going to change unless the election, I mean, everything really depends upon who is selected. I really do think that the primary is the general in this situation. When you see the video of these guys getting off those Higgin boats and storming the sandy beaches, do you ever stop and ask yourself, especially with the attack on masculinity and the attack on dudes and the attack on just like anything that doesn't confine to the cultural Marxism that has infected our society, do you ever wonder if we could pull that off again? Think about this. And I'm going to ask Josh Hawley about this when he joins us. We were in two different, we were in different theaters. We were in Europe. We were in the Pacific. The United States attacked at Pearl Harbor. We had to basically rebuild part of our fleet. The Japanese were shocked that we could do it so quickly because we mobilized and we became self-sufficient. We didn't have to rely on anyone else. And we were able to churn it out ourselves and everyone was determined. Can we do that again? It's almost like if you wanted to put the United States in a position where that couldn't happen, all of the steps taken to right now, kneecapping us in energy, kneecapping us in tech. I have a headline where Australians are warning us that the Chinese are going to eclipse people with tech. Owning manufacturing or minerals, all of this. These are the steps that you would be taking in order to neutralize the referee of the world, which is the United States. I do wonder, it's kind of a depressing thing to think about, but it's a necessary thing to think about. Because after the greatest generation, what is the saying? Hard times make strong men make good times make weak men, and weak men make hard times. I love the greatest generation. Strong men made good times, though. Good times made weak men, and weak men are now making hard times. That's where we are right now. It's true. That's why the aliens don't want to visit us. To my story, China is establishing a commanding lead with key military technologies, warned the Australians. The Australian Strategic Policy Institute issued findings today based on a review of the top 10% of the most highly cited research papers, concluding that China leads in 19 of 23 key categories, including some that are likely to play a major role in Beijing's push for military prominence in the Indo-Pacific and beyond. They say that they have a lead in hypersonics, electronic warfare, and key undersea capabilities. And they're so emphatic that they create a significant risk that China might dominate future technological breakthroughs in these areas. They found that for hypersonics, 9 of the 10 leading research institutions are based in China. And China is home to all 10 of the top research venues for undersea drones. So, and the hypersonic weapons are highly maneuverable, even though they go like, what, Mach 5? So they also, the analysis also found indications that China is using Western research institutions to its advantage. If you don't make smart decisions now, you're going to have to make hard decisions later. And I feel like we're really, really rolling towards that. And I don't think that a lot of people have the political will to do what they need to. And I think it goes down to two things. Some people want to stay in their elected seat because they think that they can do more good if they remain in the seat. And some people want to stay in the seat because they just want to stay in the seat. And they don't want to risk or have to pay any of their political capital. They don't want to rock the boat. They don't want to lose that power. And in the meantime, we all suffer for it. Now, as it relates to sports, something's happening with golf. That's literally what I put into Slack this morning. I do not watch golf. I'm going to be honest with you. I don't watch it. I know a lot of you play it. I don't want to hear it. You'll never convert me. It'll never happen. Partially because I am too competitive. I will beat someone with a golf club. It's never going to happen. It doesn't seem like a chill sport. Everybody seems mad. I watch Happy Gilmore. Everybody seems mad when they play golf. Can you play golf?
You're too chill to play golf. I haven't played in decades.
Your SCOBY would die out there.
What?
Yeah, that little bacteria tea.
You just drink beer. That's what you do.
See, that makes it worse. See, they get mad. Look, let me tell you something. They get mad at parents at Chuck E. Cheese drinking. Why are you drinking at the golf course? Just saying. Steve, you play golf, don't you?
Yep.
Sometimes? Yeah.
Yep, definitely.
Does the drinking make you better or worse? Isn't it like Chuck E. Cheese drinking?
Yeah, sort of. So when you go up to take a shot of like a golf club, not a shot of alcohol, but you do go up to take a shot, you're kind of nervous. But when you take, you have less like fear when you go up and you drink a little bit. So you just go.
What are you nervous about though? When you go up and you like
your shoulders and your waist and your stance. I mean, there's so many things to think about. It's all mental sport.
See, I just don't know. That seems like too much to me. How do you relax? See, you're all stressed out. How do people play golf to relax? I will never understand that. Because what you just said, like you have to hit it a certain way, and then every different golf club is for something different. That's too much to remember. Right? I have a hard enough time just keeping my button straight on my Xbox controller. Okay? I don't need to add all of that on top of it. That's way too much to remember. You know what I'm saying? Like I just tried, Deep Rock again last night. It's ridiculous. I've never played as the scout before. It's impossible. Anyway, long story short, that seems like a lot of stuff to add to it. You know what I mean? There's a wedge and there's a driver. And do you get a person like in Caddyshack to help you and tell you what to do?
No, not until you start making professional money.
Well, then if you're making professional money, why didn't that guy just play? I don't know. I don't know enough about golf. See, me talking about golf is like Joe Biden talking about guns.
Or anything else.
Yeah, or really anything. Like any, particularly guns, but really anything else. Anyway, my whole point bringing this up. PGA, they're merging with the Saudi-backed rival LIV. Now, Steve says this is important because the Saudis basically bought golf. Like all of the golf? All of the golf.
All of it.
So I don't like that. That just rubs me the wrong way. No offense, but... You know, I don't want anyone owning all the golf. It just seems like, you know, China owning all the rare earth minerals, Saudis owning all the golf. It's weird, right? Am I just being too conspiratorial? I mean, I basically live in a tinfoil yurt anymore. Am I too conspiratorial?
I've seen the discussions on, and Steve can probably jump in on this too, but it's about the pay. And I think that a lot of it, you know, LIV, which is, I guess, the Roman numeral for 54, They're there to, and they're claiming that they pay better. They have a lot of money, the Saudis, so apparently.
People are saying that they're trying to sports wash their human rights abuses.
I've seen that too. And I think that's absolutely part of it.
Like the 9/11 stuff. I mean, you had 15 of them that were from Saudi Arabia.
Yeah.
Just, you know, I don't know. There's a, you can't talk about that though, because it's politically incorrect. Eat my shorts, Bart Simpson once smartly said. I couldn't say that when I was a kid. You know, you would get in trouble if you repeated that. Yeah.
To catch up on all the headlines and crazy wokery, download the Dana Show podcast and get Dana's perspective on the Dana Show.
Soon, one by one, the Rangers pulled themselves over the top And in seizing the firm land at the top of these cliffs, they began to seize back the continent of Europe. 225 came here. After 2 days of fighting, only 90 could still bear arms. And behind me is a memorial that symbolizes the ranger daggers that were thrust into the top of these cliffs. And before me are the men who put them there. These are the boys of Puente Hope. These are the men who took the cliffs. These are the champions who helped free a continent. And these are the heroes who helped end a war.
This is Reagan's speech marking an anniversary of D-Day. 79 years ago today, we are celebrating what society now would call toxic masculinity that liberated Europe, stopped the Nazi spread, fought the axis of evil. And I am here today because of the efforts of my grandfather. A lot of people are here because of the efforts of their grandparents. We were blessed enough to have in our family grandparents on either side of the globe fighting evil and defending liberty. What amazing examples we have to look up to. One was there in Normandy, a dog-faced soldier. The other on the USS Alabama fighting Imperial Japan. Welcome back to the program. Dana Lash here with you. Bottom of this third hour. I have the pleasure of talking to my home state senator, Josh Hawley, about a book that I love that I'm talking to him about this book today. I love that we had some scheduling changes and that he had to do some stuff and we had everything was going on. And he is on with me on D-Day to talk about manhood. As you can see, I've been making notes, Senator. Congratulations on this book. I'm glad that you wrote it. And thank you for being with me today. The book is Manhood, the Masculine Virtues America Needs. What a book for such a time. And on today, especially, when you think of the 18 and the 19 and the 20-year-olds that took part in fighting the axis of evil 79 years ago today, Senator, this book really, really is a lot heavier than it looks when you consider that sentiment today. I just wanted to get your thoughts on that.
Absolutely. First of all, thanks for having me. It's great to be with you. And you are absolutely right. We need to say to men today, young men especially, you can be as great as that greatest generation if you will take the kind of responsibility they took on. You know, what made them so amazing is they were willing to shoulder the responsibility that came to them. And boy, was it big responsibility in those years. But you know what? There's a lot of responsibility that men need to shoulder today. I mean, you look around our country, we're in crisis. You look at our families, we're in crisis. You look at our economy, it's in crisis. You know, there's a lot of responsibility out there. And men, you want to leave a legacy like those men did a couple generations ago, step up and take on some responsibility.
Amen to that. This book, I love the way that you have it organized, first off, because when I opened it up, I don't know what I was expecting for your chapters, but you get into all the roles that men play. You get into, you know, the husband, the warrior, the father, the priest, the king, the builder, all of it. And you have it in a couple of different parts, the purpose and then the roles that they play. This was tell me about what was in your mind when you were creating this book, because it is very specific and it's very scripturally based as well, which hasn't earned you any fans from the people whose favor you don't look to get, I'm sure.
No, absolutely. The left absolutely hates it. And they hate all the Bible talk. And listen, I'm unapologetic about it. The book is full of the Bible. You know, I mean, the Bible's kind of an important book. And it's been kind of important in our history, you might say. So what I really do is I try to tell stories in the book, Dana, of good, strong men. I tell stories from the Bible, stories from American history, stories from my own experience, coaches, mentors in my life, and hold them up as role models of, yes, fatherhood and being a husband and being a builder and being a warrior, and try to call men to those roles, those responsibilities, and that kind of vision. I just feel like the left has lied to men for decades and said that to be a man is to be toxic. And the left's message to men is, you know, just go down to the basement, turn on the computer screen, entertain yourself, and do nothing. Mm. And we need to say to men, turn off the computer, come out of the basement, take on some responsibility, and change the world.
Amen to that. I love we're talking with Senator Josh Hawley. One of my favorite parts in the book was in the man's battle, when you get in the duty to guard, because you say the heart of Adam's mission was the obligation to place himself between the good things God had given him, his wife, his family, his home, and evil. Adam was to be part of God's solution to the danger in the world. If evil would enter the garden, it had to first contend with him. That was the plan. I find that to be flattering to the female sex, one of two. I find that to really also show who has had the responsibility in terms of who's going to bear the consequence. That's what a lot of people think when they try to level accusations of sexism at scripture. I'm always like, you're to be lifted up as the church. You know, women aren't told that. The men are told that. And the men are also told of the severe consequences if they do not follow these edicts. I wanted you to talk a little bit a bit about that, because I thought that was like I said, it was one of my favorite parts of the book. And I feel like a lot of people in the conservative sphere today are a little afraid to talk about that.
I think the truth is that when you get right down to it, what men are called to do is make themselves expendable. You know, to be a responsible man is to say, if it comes down to it, I'm going to sacrifice my life, my interests, my time, so that other people can live. And of course, that begins with your wife and your children. And I think we need to call men to that kind of responsibility. Listen, every man, and you know this, Dana, I mean, every man wants to be significant. And the truth is, every man wants to have responsibility. We just have to give them a vision for it. And I think that at the base of that, the core of it is, live a sacrificial life. If somebody has to sacrifice, you sacrifice. Be the one who can do that, and you will empower other people.
You also get into the war on pride. Very fitting, because not only is it D-Day, 79 years on, but now it's Pride Month. You have a whole section, page 119, the war on pride, in which you get into how, you know, that's really, pride is a sin. And everyone is tempted by pride. And you talk about status and all of the things that men are distracted by and told that they should pursue, which is far from, again, going back to the original plan. But how do we get back to that, though, in society? I mean, I know we talk about rebuilding families, and it seems like that's, you know, talking about it is one thing, but how do we encourage that in society?
Well, I think the way that, first of all, with men, the way that we do it is, I think we give men these good role models, and we go back to our foundational truths, you know, back to the scripture, we go back to American history, we go back to the best things in our own lives, and we say, listen, here's what it looks like. Nobody's perfect. You know, there's no perfect role model out there, except for, in my opinion, one, Jesus Christ. But other than that, nobody's perfect. So we find men who are good, who are strong, and we say, be like that, aspire to be like that. Part of what's so toxic about the left is the left has run down all of the role models in our history. You know, they criticize all of American history, say it's bigoted and racist, and that every great American leader was a bigot and a racist. That's not true. We need to reclaim those role models for young men especially and say, aspire to be like this. And then, Dana, we've got to do more when it comes to the way we make our laws to actually protect the family. Parents ought to have control over their kids' education. Parents ought to have the ability to know what their kids are being taught, not have their kids being assigned different genders or given gender-changing drugs behind their back. We may get serious about that and give real power back to the family.
Now we're talking to Senator Josh Hawley, whose new book, Manhood, The Masculine Virtues America Needs. It's a great read. You were talking about role models. Unfortunately, you know, some of the role models maybe aren't people who are designed to be role models, but because of their status, or because of, you know, they might be children of, say, like Joe Biden. You know, we have a 50-something-year-old guy who has a lot of baggage, who is in a very elevated position because he is the son of the president of the United States. He receives a lot of special accommodation because of who he is. The media treats him like he's an infant, even though he's, you know, probably, you know, able to get into AMAC or AARP. But there's no accountability. And that's the other part of it. You know, what gets me is that the people who've been criticizing your book, or who like to say that male conservatives or Republicans are sexist, these are the people who don't acknowledge their own sexism and their inability to hold accountable the people in their own party, like the president of the United States, who refuses to acknowledge a granddaughter or his son. I mean, how can they criticize when they're guilty of worse?
You know, and what gets me about the left, and you just put your finger on it, Dana, is that they talk about sexism, misogyny, but then they turn around and their message to men is, be passive, be a dead weight on society. Really, I mean, you think about what they're telling men. It's like, again, entertain yourself on some screens. You know, if you want to become a woman, you can do that. Go ahead, become a woman, play woman sports, be passive, don't rock the boat, do as you're told. Basically, contribute nothing. Just be there. That's not a message of responsibility. We need to send men the opposite message, which is that, you know, male strength is a good thing. when it's used in service to God and family and nation. And we need to call men to do that and say, listen, we need you to be significant. We need you to be influential. We need you to serve others.
You know, we were talking about Reagan's speech starting off our conversation, and we've shown, at least on the simulcast of the radio program, we've shown some of the footage of, you know, these young men getting out of these Higgins boats, storming the beaches in Normandy. Do we have that strength to be able to replicate that if, heaven forbid, fate should call again today? Do we even have the will? I feel like a lot of men are just feel beaten down and are tired. What is your thought?
I think we have the strength if you call men to it. And this is part of why I wrote the book. I've got two little boys at home, Dana, and thinking about them is really what motivated me to write this book. I think every man can change the destiny of his life, of his family, and yeah, of this nation, but you've got to call them to it. And it's really, at the end of the day, it's up to each man, right? I mean, nobody's going to do it for you. Nobody's responsible for your life but you. You have to make the decision. And if you do that, if you will step up, if you will take on responsibility, you can be as significant as the men of the greatest generation. What made them significant is because they were willing to take responsibility. They were willing to sacrifice. And we need more men like that today in America.
We're talking to Senator Josh Hawley, Manhood, the Masculine Virtues America Needs. Before I let you go, Senator, I have to ask you, too, about, you know, some of the news that's been, whether it's, you know, the debt ceiling or China or the FBI whistleblower who apparently now, I was a little unnerved to read some of what's being said about that. We're worried about the safety of this whistleblower because something they could, I mean, are we worried that a whistleblower could be killed in this FBI investigation ongoing with the administration?
I can't believe the retaliation that this administration is levying across all whistleblowers, the IRS whistleblowers, multiple FBI whistleblowers who have come forward on different subjects, Dana. It's not even just Hunter Biden. It is the broader investigation of the Biden family. It's the J6 stuff. I mean, we've had multiple whistleblowers now, and one after another is saying, I've been fired, I've been demoted, I've been threatened. That's illegal. Let me just be clear about it. It's not just wrong. It's illegal. Our law protects whistleblowers. I'm really concerned by what we're seeing here. And I think that Congress, you know, the House, they're doing the right thing. You got to call these people on the carpet. Merrick Garland needs to be put under oath. Frankly, Merrick Garland needs to be relieved of duty. They talk about a guy who's abusing the rule of law. But we've got to be clear here. Protect these whistleblowers and get to the bottom of what they're alleging.
Gosh, it's all, I mean, it's terrifying stuff to read. And it's, we had that saying, Kane, I was telling my producer earlier, what is it? You have hard times make strong men make good times, and good times make weak men, and weak men make hard times. I think we're in the weak men hard times.
We are, but we can be again in the strong men good times if we'll call men to responsibility. You know,
you
if we'll
go.
Say to men,
I hope
you're
so.
Needed.
I hope so.
Yeah.
For your sons and for my sons and for all the sons out there. Senator Josh Hawley, the book is Manhood, the Masculine Virtues America Needs. I think everybody needs to go out and get this book. I love the way you have it organized, and I love how unapologetically scripturally based it is. Good job. This is really well done. Thank you for coming on, and congrats on this book.
Thank you for having me.
Of course. Take care. We have more to come, folks, as we finish up this third hour of the broadcast. And it is a very, actually, it's a good, I read it in one night. It's a very good book. It's not huge. It's a very good book. Anyway, like I said, make sure that you can get, well, you'll be able to find our discussion on Facebook, YouTube, all that stuff. And make sure you subscribe over at Substack, Chapter and Verse, because all the stuff that we've been talking about, the Mad Piper, Ghost Army, I have a bunch of stuff coming at you later today. You'll enjoy it. We have more to come. We have today's stupidity on the way. Stay with us.
Whether you just want to stay informed or just hear her vent about all the ridiculousness in the world, make sure to download the Dana Show podcast wherever you get your podcasts.
Yes. Make sure you sign up for Chapter and Verse. I have to tell you, one of my favorite, it's not so much AD Day speech, but it is, this was one of his most famous speeches. They said it was probably around June 5th, the day before D-Day, and it was Patton. You guys know what this one is. It's his speech to the Third Army. I can't even read half of it. God love him. It's probably one of my favorite things I've ever read. It's one of the most brilliant things that's ever been spoken. And he's, you know, Patton had a particular way of speaking. You know how some people have a particular set of skills? Patton also had a particular set of skills. And one of, what did he said? He said that an army without profanity couldn't find its way out of a blank soaked paper bag. His speech, he did not mess around. He said in his speech, this is apparently, again, it was reported to be on June 5th. He goes, I don't want any messages saying I'm holding my position. We're not holding a blank damn thing. We're advancing constantly, and we're not interested in holding anything except the enemy's balls. That's what he said. Omar Bradley, who used to be a subordinate, he was like, oh, my gosh, why do you got to be like this? Why do you have to be so Patton was like, I don't care. It motivated the troops. It motivated them. And, oh, man, it's just, he talked about pushing harder means fewer casualties. He's like, I want you all to remember that. My men don't surrender. He's like, I don't want to hear of any soldier under my command being captured unless he's hit. And even if you're hit, you can still fight. He said, that's not just BS either. He's like, I want the men like the lieutenant in Libya who with a Luger in his chest swept aside the gun with his hand, jerked off his helmet with the other, and busted the hell out of the Boche with the helmet. And then he's like, and then he picked up a gun and killed another German. I mean, he went on. He's like, that's a man for you. And he also celebrated everybody who was from the highest to the lowest position. He said the Army was a team. He goes, the individual hero stuff is BS. He's like, the blank blank who write that for the Saturday Evening Post don't know any more about real battle than they do about blanking. That's what he said. God, love Patton. And he says he said that he pitied the ones they were going up against. He said everybody from the mess hall to the one who boils the water to keep us from getting the GI runs has a job to do, he said. Amen. God, love it. I mean, that's love it. And he said he wants, when he was talking to his men, he said he wants them to be able to look their grandkids in the eye and say, son, your granddaddy rode with the great Third Army and a son of a blank blank named George Patton. Arouse the troops. I mean, you're talking about, I mean, they're coming at this from every angle, and specifically on the beaches of Normandy. And here, this was reported to have been right before D-Day. Patton giving the speech. And on the speeches of Normandy, you know, the beaches of Normandy, one of the things to remember, I mean, when you look at the overall operation and the bravery, God bless the greatest generation who fought and protected our freedoms. God bless them. All right. Today in stupidity, Kane.
It's going to be Karine Jean-Pierre. Now, you know, the Biden administration has been taking illegal immigrants and flying them, busing them all over the country in the dark of night without our permission.
Yes.
Or our knowledge, for that matter. Listen to what she's saying.
Said it many times from here, repeatedly from this podium, that busing or flying migrants around the country without any coordination with the federal government, we've talked about this, state or local officials as well, is dangerous and unacceptable.
I love how they don't coordinate with states, and they fly them all over the country. Mm-hmm. But as soon as states want to send them out, oh, no, can't be doing that.
Yeah, can't do that. No, heaven forbid.
Can't do that.
Folks, that does it for us today. I hope you have a wonderful rest of your day, and tip a hat, pour one out for the greatest generation. God bless. Back tomorrow.